And now I have the great joy of introducing myself for the next talk. My talk is about the development and cooperator testing of an active carbon field kit. This is an effort that was undertaken with a great number of people and over a 15-month period. With the additional data and participation, I don't have it on that front page, but with Dr. Lee Burris and his graduate students.
It's really the graduate students. I don't
know. Yeah. Well, you had to get them to do the work, right? Anyway, the reason and the purpose and the description here, we at the National Soil Survey Center were requested many times to come up with some sort of a way that the MLRA offices could assess a carbon parameter in soils and assess in such a way that it would be easy for them to get this information quick and they wouldn't have to wait for us at the lab to send that data back. It's based on a method that was developed in the United States by Ray Weil and followed a kit design that he had originally proposed in 2003 in one of his publications. And Dr. Weil gave a talk about his kit and a demonstration yesterday afternoon. It provides a fairly accurate proxy assessment of a critical soil component that had previously been sort of unable to be analyzed in a field office, and that is organic matter. And presently our kits have been put together at the Soil Survey Center and are available for the MLRA field offices. And what we can do for people who are not in the soil survey is provide the instructions, the methods, and the list of things that you need for these kits to analyze for active carbon. So how does this kit work? Well, it uses a rather striking color reaction of a potassium permanganate solution, a dark purple solution. The higher the active carbon is in this soil that you react with that solution, the more the color bleaches out. So we have to be careful when we have soils that have high active carbon contents. We always have to reduce the sample size. We cannot dilute the solution that we get from the reaction to get the color reading. We actually have to redo the shaking stage. The kit employs portable instrument set of both a little balance, a little scale, and also this little colorimeter put out by Hawk that's set at 550 nanometers. It's a very sturdy little instrument. It's a little spendy, but it's very, very reliable. In our kits, we include two pre-weighed standard soils that we have tested and that we are making available for the field offices and also for other people who are doing active carbon assessments. The components that come in this field kit look like this, and it looks like a bunch of chemistry set stuff, and that's what it is. It's got labeled vials, bottles, volumetrics for you to make your solutions. You've got your little set of test tubes you can do your shaking in. You've got the colorimeter here. You've got the sieve to sieve your soils. We've got everything for a person to use and do this analysis. I'll give you a little bit of a virtual demonstration here. How does it work? Well, you weigh the soil into the tubes here, and you shake that with this permanganate solution. You can see that it looks kind of muddy and mucky, and there's not much of a color there. However, when we also provide with the kit these inline filters for the syringes, and so you filter your solution out, you come up with this dark purple solution, and then you do a dilution of that solution to put it into the colorimeter and to get the reading off of it. You actually put the cap over the top and that gives you the reading. We have a calibration solution that you check to see if your colorimeter is working. And the two standard soils will give you a calculated active carbon content that we use as a quality control check so that you can see whether or not the readings that you're getting from your analytical procedure are falling in the ballpark. So why did we use a set of cooperators to do this testing? Well, we wanted to find out how the kit responds to different soils and different conditions, mineralogy management, the soil climate. The cooperators provided us with the bonus of us sent, when we sent the kits out and they did the steps, they could help us determine what were the best practices for collecting samples and for handling those samples as they get from the field to the lab and then processed through the lab. The steps along the way for the kit itself, some people were confused by the directions, and so we were able to clarify the instructions. Some people needed to be, we needed to put more clear instructions in there about what kind of water that you have to use. We have to use distilled water if you want the best results, because sometimes other water that you use from your tap might contain contaminants that would react with the permanganate. And of course the standard soils for the quality control. They helped us identify the problems, and what was really fun to do was propose solutions and to work with them on this. The soils we evaluated came from Alabama, California, Idaho, Iowa, Missouri, Oregon, and Virginia. We have agricultural soils from Alabama, Idaho, Iowa, and Missouri that were under no-till and conventional till. In California, we had managed grazing systems and burn regimes on some xeralfs. In Oregon, we had a variety of soil orders under various forest rotations and managements. In Virginia, we were provided samples that were coming from pasture that was well managed or abandoned, also mature and regrowth forest. So we had a variety of soils to work with to see whether or not our kit was going to prove to give us lab quality or soil survey lab quality data. So the samples were gathered, processed at the cooperator facilities, a split was made, and the samples were then returned to the lab where the analysis was coordinated to run on approximately the same time, as close as possible with each other. The additional active carbon analyses were run at the soil survey lab to verify the amounts that we were finding, the values we were finding in those soils, just to make sure we were doing a good job with the field kit. We had some more strenuous methods that we utilized. And then after every one of these sessions of getting samples in was done, which was about every 3 months, we had a teleconference where we talked about what was going on. So the first thing we were interested in was looking at the confidence level of the assessment itself. And so we used the two standards. I have a Haplergid and an RGUdol. Here, RGUdol, and then here's the Haplergid. And you see the level of active carbon down there that we use. And so we had this range that we set out, say that these are the acceptable ranges for this standard that you can get. Well, over time, we started collecting more data from the standard soils, and these ranges changed, as you can see. In the very end, by the time I had over 100 separate data points for the standard soils, we came up to a final adjustment of that range. And we found out that that final adjustment in both the higher concentration active carbon standard and the lower one fell at about 25% of the mean. 25% above, 25% below. And so we came to think that at this point that 25% is the uncertainty due to the material that you're testing, the active carbon itself, and also the method that we're using, the reaction of the potassium permanganate. And when I ran an independent set of standards through analyses, 95% of those points here fell within that range. So I was holding up to what I was actually independently testing these, and it was holding true. Well, this is a busy graph of all of the data points we collected, almost 300 data points. And what I have down here is I have our stringent lab method down here that's very exacting and precise. And up here is the cooperator field kit data. And what I have here is an envelope of plus or minus 25%. The plus 25% means that the field kit overestimated that active carbon relative to the soil survey, and this is the underestimates. And 76% of those points fell within that acceptable uncertainty range. Another question we came up with is, when is the best time to sample for active carbon? This is something that might change season to season, if not precipitation event to precipitation event. And that had been one of the drawbacks of looking at this particular measure in soils. Well, we went in the spring here and took samples. This was our first sampling, actually, in February and March. And we found that 87% of the points fell within there. However, when we went to the second sampling in June and July, we only had 55% of the points fall in there. So this active growing season, when there's a lot of stuff going on, is not the best time to sample for active carbon with our little field kit. When we went back to September, October, we went back more to the 85% of those points falling in line. In the wintertime, 82% fell in line. But of course, this is wintertime in most of the states. However, in California, it is their active growing time, so the California points actually skewed out a little bit more out of range. And so we came to the conclusion that the best thing to do is to grow to take these samples outside those active plant growing or the most active biological time periods and try to keep it when the soil is at the quiet time. And of course in tropical soils you're going to say, well, it's always going on. But what we found in the Alabama soils was that actually the active carbon did not shift all that much from season to season. So it's kind of reached a stasis or static state, steady state in its dynamics. Well, one of the questions we get, of course, is now can I use the active carbon data that I get to tell me something about total carbon? Yes, you can. But with the huge caveat that every place is going to be different. Right here I'm showing five of the cooperators. I'm showing here's Alabama's, here's Missouri's, here's Idaho's, this is California, this is Oregon. Each one of these slopes and intercepts is different. When I add more data in, and this is through 1 year's worth of data, you can see that there's some trends setting up in here with Virginia up there. And so that tells you that, yes, perhaps you can develop an algorithm from the active carbon information relating it to total carbon, and it will give you some relationship that you can then use the active carbon kit to tell you total carbon. But it has to be carefully developed. When you look at the relationship, when I include all the points out to rather high total carbon, you can see, of course, we've got this tight relationship down here, but it's still some linearity to it, but you can see that the splay is pretty substantial there. So in conclusion, I found that my two standard soils that we ran repeated measures on were a good way of determining what the uncertainty range of this method and parameter really were. The seasonal variability is pretty obvious in there, and we recommend that the sampling be done at times of biological dormancy or a slower period of activity in the soil. The active carbon field kit, in our estimation, does return relatively robust analytical data compared to the soil survey lab method. And of course, its benefit to everyone is being able to analyze right there on the spot and get data, you know, within a day of taking samples. Active carbon is correlated to total carbon, but through numerous conditional constraints. I have time for one question. And anybody who wants to talk to me about it can talk to me later as well. Yes, Sky. Between the different fields, how did we handle the samples?
Did you dry them and then ship them into the lab?
The cooperators actually ran these through a 2-millimeter sieve and then did a split of that and sent it to us. So they were shipped moist. When they came back, we at field moist capacity, we would go ahead and we did a comparison between air dried and moist, and it was not significant. Yeah, it was not a significant difference there. So treating the samples, drying them, it didn't have an effect.